My name is Steve Burnett. I'm the junior high pastor here on the East Campus. So if your kids have been in either the Calvary School or the junior high group or Desert Christian Middle School over the last 7 or 8 years, then I've probably met them or know them and know some of you through them, for better or worse. And so what we're going to do tonight is we're talking about internet safety, and since there are people watching online as well, I just want to cover one announcement, which is for those of you watching, this is geared towards parents, and that the reason for that is that we talk about ways both that kids use the internet and search terms that are being used and things about the internet. We also talk about ways that your children may be circumventing or that kids can circumvent the internet. And so if those of you watching online, if you don't want your kids to hear that material, then you can ask them to not watch with you. But I just wanted to make that announcement. And so for those of you who have kids here, if you're okay with having them hear that information, then that's fine. Otherwise, they will make it available next door at the school to let them be over there. So with that said, I'm going to cover things, the internet, and from two different points of view. The first, I'm going to cover the basics of the internet and applications and what the security concerns are. I'm doing this presentation in conjunction with Sean Halowinski from TPD. He was with the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit, and he will be talking about the people and more predator-oriented aspects of dangers online. And so together, we hope to give you a very complete set of information and facts about what the dangers are and how you can protect your kids from them, what you need to know. So I will not be talking in a great level of detail about the internet. It's going to be very simple. For those of you who are expecting technical talk, the OSI model and things like that, you're going to be disappointed. For those of you who have no idea what the OSI model is, this is a great presentation for you. So it's just not that technical. I do want to try and explain how the internet works as it relates to computers, phones, different devices, so that you need to know that in order to understand what you need to do to protect yourself and protect your children from the dangers that are around. And the way that the format will work here is we're going to, I will do the first part of the presentation, Sean will do the second part, and then we will open it up for questions. So for those of you online, we don't have a way for you to submit questions, I'm sorry, but this presentation will be available as a recording as well. So for those who who came in late, or if you want to tell people about it, it will be on the Calvary website as a downloadable or viewable video. So with all that said, all right, this does work. So I want to go into some of the things that are concerns on the internet. And you're probably aware of these, but I just want to go into them in a little bit of detail. So the first one is just exposure to age-inappropriate content. You're fully aware that there is a lot of sex on the internet. Pornography is a primary use of the internet. The statistics are that on mobile phones, there are billions and billions of searches done on the internet, every year, obviously. But 1 in 5 searches done on the internet through a mobile phone is for porn. Okay, that's 1 in every 5 searches. It's just a staggering statistic. So there's a site online that has statistics on how many searches there are for some type of pornography online. That's this year. I just looked at the counter as we started here. It's over 1.5 billion since the beginning of 2015 searches for that. You'll see that also in Sean's presentation, the ages that are being exposed on the internet to pornography. Pornography is a really big problem on the internet, as you well know. The average age, this is the average age that kids are exposed to pornography on the internet. It dropped. It was 8 years old. It's now 6 years old is the average age. So there are some younger that are being exposed to pornography on the internet. And it's because they are given devices. They have tablets. You know, 3-year-olds have tablets. Everybody does. They can type any term into a browser, and they can get images. If you don't do anything to protect your kids from the content, they can absolutely find it, and they absolutely do find it. You don't need to wonder about that. I took a poll in our junior high group at one point and was asking about how many kids have some kind of parental controls. I think we had, out of that group, it was one or two out of 50 had some kind of control, otherwise completely unrestricted access to it. Now, it's not that the kids are bad and that's why they're going online and doing that, it's they're curious. I mean, you can type in very simple terms in trying to find things out as far as where babies come from or, you know, this type of thing, and end up in very bad places. And so you have to be very aware. So it's not just the pornography. That is a major thing, but they're looking up. There's a lot of hate speech. There is violence. You hear about ISIS and beheadings and such. You can see the videos going on with that. And you can, you know, the kids can watch these things. And it makes a big impact on a kid to see something like a beheading. It's just you don't want your kids to see these things. If you don't have restrictions, then it's just difficult to, you have very little control over what they can see. The second problem I want to talk about is difficulty in protecting children's privacy. This is not just for the predators, which Sean will talk more about, but from marketers and commercial enterprises that are gathering information. Some of you may be familiar with sites like Nick or Club Penguin that the kids go to on a regular basis. Club Penguin released some statistics, and on that site, kids are asked for an address and a phone number. Almost half of the kids on that site were willing to give that information to a site that they really don't have any idea what that's being used for. That in that case, it is being used for marketing purposes. They do market to kids. So these kids will get emails and everything else targeted to them, and that's just one example. The kids are willing to put in information unless they're taught otherwise. And so it's privacy, not just from predators, but from commercial enterprises in protecting your kids is a concern. And then the last one is online predators. There are, unfortunately, people out there looking for kids. They're looking for kids for bad purposes. And Sean will go into that in a lot more detail, but they get very sophisticated in how they do this. You know, it's not, you know, like they're, you know, older men being on there, you know, trying to make friends with these young girls. Sometimes they'll pose as young boys or that kind of thing, put up a nice picture. Often they're posing if they're looking for girls. They'll set up profiles and Facebook profiles and everything else as young girls. So they establish a peer-to-peer relationship, agree to meet, that kind of thing. Sean, I'm going into more detail on that. It is the amount of that goes on is fairly staggering, and it's your kids are susceptible to it if you don't teach them and if you don't protect them. So that's what we're going to try and cover here in this presentation, is give you some tools to be able to help from a technology point of view and an education point of view, so you understand how to take some steps. What I will tell you, though, is the technology that's around it's the way that the technology is structured, which you'll see here, is structured in such a way that it's very difficult to protect your kids 100%. You really can't do it unless you just don't let them have access online at all. It's just almost impossible. So we'll talk about establishing a relationship with your kids. You've got to have an open relationship with your kids, and you've got to be involved in their online lives. And I'll talk a little bit about that. Sean will talk about that. You need a backstop to the barriers that you put in place in technology, because it's not enough. There will always be ways for them to get around the technology. And where we're at in the technology curve right now, a lot of times the kids know a whole lot more about the technology than the parents do in there. And so that's what we want to educate you, so that you have an idea of what is behind that, and you can at least speak somewhat intelligently and understand the tools and such. So with that said, I'm going to try and give you a very basic definition, some basic definitions of the components that go into the internet and accessing the internet. And anytime someone says that they're going to explain technical concepts in a simple way, it usually does not work. But I will do my best. I'm going to keep this very, very basic, Okay, and this is my incredible, are the slides changing? Yes. This is my incredible internet diagram. Okay, the internet, the internet is wires and, electricity and data going through wires. It is a way to connect things. Okay, you have to have devices and software to see anything on the internet. When we talk about the internet is connectivity. It's a network. It doesn't do anything by itself. So a misconception is that you bring up your browser, you know, your Internet Explorer, your Chrome, or something like that, and that's the internet. That's not the internet. And so it's a differentiation that we need to make for several reasons, and you'll see as we go into this. So the internet is nothing but a way to connect devices together. Okay, that's all it is. And you can see, I mean, we've got, you know, computers and tablets and cell phones. Cars are now connected to the internet. We've got home appliances connected to the internet. You know, there's coffee makers connected to the internet. Everything is being connected to the internet, okay? You may be familiar, you may not be familiar with the Internet of Things, which is a term now used in the technology industry. And the Internet of Things just means everything is going to be connected to the internet. Take the cars example, the first car hacking, the hacking of a car happened, a Jeep happened a few months ago. And people got in and they overthrew the internet, got control of a Jeep, and were able to stop it on the highway and make it do crazy things. And it was somewhat of a controlled test. They had actually told the driver they were going to do it. It ended up with Chrysler having to send out over a million flash drives to owners of Jeeps for them to plug into their cars, to their Jeeps, to update the software because their Jeeps got hacked. Okay, the internet was, all the internet did there was establish a communication from the car to the people that were hacking it. There had to be software written in order for it to do anything. So keep in mind that the internet, when we talk about that and when people talk about the internet, all that is connections, okay? And we'll talk about the different parts of the internet next. So to access the internet, you have to have three things. Okay, you've got to have a hardware device, a computer, a tablet, a cell phone, that type of thing. You've got to have a connection. So we've got the internet, which is just, you know, wires and wireless things and all that kind of thing. It connects everything together. You have to have some way to get on that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail. But that's the network. So as you're familiar, there's Wi-Fi networks and there's cell phone networks, data networks, there's home networks. There's all kinds of ways to get on the internet. But you have to have a device that's capable of connecting to a network. Then you have to have a network to connect to. And then you need to have software. And we'll talk about the different types of software. But software isn't just your internet browser. Software can be your Xbox, computer games. It can be the apps on your phone. All of those use the internet. They use the connections to tie everything together. Okay, so back in that slide where I was talking about what the internet was and all those connections, remember that once something is connected to the internet, it's connected to everything else on the internet and everybody else on the internet, in theory. Depends on the way that the software is set up and the network and that type of thing, but it connects everything together. So let me go on here. So let's talk about the devices here. Obviously, computers, all types of computers connect to the internet at this point. Phones, it's not just smartphones. Flip phones connect to the internet as well. You know, the so-called dumb phones, home phones, that kind of thing. Game consoles, okay, they connect to the internet. Some of you, that's standard now, and many of them won't run without the internet on that. And there are certain dangers that come with that. Home appliances now, refrigerators, Amazon has these dash buttons, you know, you stick it on your washer and when you're running out of detergent, you press it and it automatically orders and sends it to you. So this little button is connected to the internet on there. Cars, as I talked about, connected to the internet. Wearables, you know, eyeglasses, the Google Glass, watches, the smart watches connected to the internet. They even have now clothing is starting to have semiconductors built into it and networks built into it, short range ones. So for instance, when you walk into a store, if you're wearing a shirt from, you know, a particular store, whatever it is, and you're walking into that store, they can identify you, know who you are. They can change their electronic displays to match, you know, show you something that you might be interested in. It's pretty amazing the level of personalization that it's getting because everything is getting connected to the internet. Goes back to the privacy concerns and everything else, but it requires some kind of electronics, some kind of device in order to connect to the internet. The next thing is the connections themselves. So we're going to do this in building blocks here. So hang with me, okay? It's not very complicated. I have like one more slide after this talking about how we connect, and then we'll start talking about some tools and how it all fits together. But so first we've got a device. You have to have a device. And so let's take a phone, a smartphone. That smartphone can connect to the internet in a few different ways. It connects through Wi-Fi, which, you know, if you're in a place like this, then you can be connected via Wi-Fi or, you know, or public places. You can also connect via your data plan. So, you know, through a cell phone tower and cell phone communications, you get data that way, so you can connect to the internet that way. Through wired connections, which are less popular now, but you can plug in a whole lot of places. Bluetooth is a way to get on the internet. We're going to be talking about that more later because people are not that aware of what that is. Bluetooth is a very short-range type of network connection. Normally, it's used for things like headsets. So you wear your wireless headset. It has a Bluetooth connection to your cell phone. That connects your headset to your cell phone, which connects that to a data network and so forth from there. But what's happening is cell phones that have Bluetooth connections are being used by kids that if they don't have a data plan and their school doesn't have Wi-Fi, we'll talk about this on the software as well, but they're using these Bluetooth networks, short-range networks, and different apps to create these mesh networks so they can still text, they can still communicate with each other through Bluetooth within a school. So that's not something that most people are aware of, and these apps are getting very popular because parents haven't caught on to them yet because they're what's called a mesh network, and I'll get into that in a minute, but it's this short range. So you don't have to have a data plan. You don't have to have Wi-Fi. Just because you don't have those things doesn't mean your kids can't connect to other computers and phones and everything else. They absolutely can, and they're finding it out in droves. So the mesh networks. So that's what I'm talking about with like Bluetooth. So one of the uses for Bluetooth, like I said, is like a wireless headset, but also it can be used to form a network. And schools are a great example. There's an application called JOTT, J-O-T-T. And this is really, really popular in middle schools. It's gaining a massive number of users every day. And what it does, the kids typically don't have Wi-Fi at school, and the parents that don't allow them to have the data plan or cut off the data plan, you know, for school or that type of thing, they get these, they use this JOTT, the JOTT applications, and then they can go ahead and they can create a network amongst themselves and use whatever apps they want to communicate just as if they were connected to the network. So they can message each other, they can send things to each other, they can do a lot of those things, and if one of those kids has a connection to the outside, they have a data plan or something like that, then they can get access to the internet through that. And so just because they don't have Wi-Fi, or the point I want to make is just because they don't have Wi-Fi or they don't have a data plan doesn't mean that they're not on the internet. It's just the way that it is right now. And then the last one I want to talk about is RFID, which that's radio frequency. And that's when your cell phones now, in addition to Bluetooth, have radio frequency RF. And so that's used for like Apple Pay and Android Pay when you hold your phone up to something and it reads it. That's what's in grocery stores. Or different stores will have RFID tags, and that's what's coming in some supermarkets. You put everything in your cart, and then they just scan it. It goes through a little scanner. And then without optically looking at it like a barcode, it reads all the information off of every item and totals everything at once. And so that's actually going on right now. And that's just another type of communication, another way to get to the internet is through RF. So I just want you to be aware that it's not just Wi-Fi and data plans. There's a whole lot of other ways to get connected to the internet with devices. So now the part I really want to talk about here, though, is the software, because with a device and a network, you still, there's nothing really that you can do with it. It's just physical connections, okay, or wireless connections. But with software, that's what makes everything possible. So there's a lot of different types of ways and software that connects to the internet. It's not just your internet browser. So that's the most known one, okay? Some people consider their internet browser, like I said, the internet. And that's not the internet. It's one way to get to certain parts of the internet. And so when you open your browser, it opens up, it's connected to the internet. You can then get to anywhere else on the internet that you have permission to get to or that you can hack your way into, and, you know, as you read all the data hacks going on and such. So the most common use, though, is obviously websites. Okay, websites are software that runs on a server somewhere, you know, elsewhere in the internet, and there is software running on that server. Your browser is a window into that server running that software. Okay, so that can be, you know, software that runs social sites, Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus. Those are software programs. Facebook is a software program that runs on, you know, massive servers. When you open your browser, you connect to and you go to Facebook. It connects to that server, and your browser becomes a window into that server. And that's the way that the internet is set up for browsers. All the browser is a window into whatever it is you're looking at, typically a website. That's what browsers are made for. And so you can, you know, access the, you know, social sites, the kids sites. You know, I mentioned Nick and Club Penguin. Very, really popular. You know, there are tens of millions of kids going to these sites every month. It's they have massive traffic for kids on these sites. Bible sites, you know, YouVersion, Bible Gateway, that kind of thing. And then a whole bunch of kid-unfriendly sites out there. Remember that if there's no parental controls, if there's no restrictions on what your kids can, if you haven't put restrictions on what your kids can see on the internet, that browser that they bring up, whether it's on their phone, on the computer, will take them to any website that is not a protected website. Any website. They can see anything that they want to see on the internet. It is completely open. Okay, and that's it should frighten you, because there are billions and billions of web pages, and there are billions and billions of pages that are not appropriate for your kids to see. It will change them in ways you don't want them to be changed. It will create addictions that you don't want created. It's so important to, I believe, shepherd our kids and be involved in this process, one, with the education, and two, with the tools to protect them. I'm not saying that they're, you know, that your kids are bad, and, you know, if they're going and looking on things at the internet, they're curious, and their friends are talking about things, people are talking about things, you know, and at the junior high age, you know, when they're starting to hear about, well, now it's before, but, you know, there's certainly, they've heard about sex and that type of thing, they want to know what it is, they can ask Google, you know, what is it? And Google will be very happy to tell them, you know, in very explicit detail in a, you know, billion different ways all about it. And so we really have a responsibility to do that. But keep in mind, too, that it's not just bad sites. Okay, it's how these sites are used. Take YouVersion, for instance. It's a Bible app and a website. So you guys, I don't know if you're familiar with that. But some of the kids in the junior high group use it. And in that, there's a messaging capability. And so you can message other people. So I get messages from kids on YouVersion while I'm teaching. They're in their YouVersion Bible sending me chat messages while they're listening to my teaching, which is a whole other story. But people can contact your kids through something as simple as a messaging app in a messaging part of a Bible application. Okay, anyone can get onto one of these sites. They can just put in an email address, get a Gmail address and get into one of these Bible sites and start meeting kids on there. You know, what kid is going to suspect that a predator is going to be in a Bible site? So they're going to meet, you know, some, you know, girl that happens to be their age and this kind of thing. And they both, you know, love Christ and share the Bible, and they're going to be great friends and all that kind of thing. It's very, very easy for these predators because of the technology. So don't think that just because you're blocking things like Facebook, that's enough. Bible apps with chat applications, with chat components, will absolutely do the same type of thing. So you have to be very careful. So you're familiar with social apps, you know, Instagram. Maybe you're familiar with Yik Yak, very popular with high school students for various bad uses. Messaging apps, okay, SMS, which is texting, is a software application, okay, and it works a little bit differently. It doesn't actually, it doesn't necessarily use the internet, but texting is probably the, you know, one of the more common ways that kids are communicating still, and certainly the parents. But, you know, as you're aware, the messaging that is available, you've got Snapchat now and a bunch of other things, so you've got a lot of ways for kids to communicate with each other with words and pictures and videos confidentially. So Snapchat disappears, Confide is all protected. There are some very sophisticated apps out there right now, social apps that allow kids to communicate with each other and send pictures and all that kind of thing that you can't detect. You'll never find them. There's no trace. You'll never find out what's going on there. On those apps, if your kids are running those apps, then you have lost control over those things. And we'll talk about some ways that you can control this a little bit. But games, whether it's console games, phone games, tablet games, games often have chat components and social components to them. If they do, then that opens up your kids to communicate with a whole bunch of people that you may not want them communicating with. They can easily flip over to another form of communication with them, with Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or anything else. But all of these are just, it's software that connects to other people through the internet. Whether it's an app that runs on a phone, whether it's a browser, whether it's a game, it's all software, and software connects, it resides on a piece of hardware that connects through a network to another piece of software that resides on another piece of hardware. And that's really the internet. So we have to look at this as far as protection and what we can do. We have to look at it at a few different levels. We have to take a look at protecting the hardware, which there's some things you can do. At protecting, there's some protection you can do on the network, and there's some protection that you can do in the software. And so we'll go on and we'll talk about this. So you can control access at three different levels. I just talked about this, which is the device, at the software, at the connection itself. And this is, I will try and keep this as non-technical as possible, but you need to understand that devices have ways to connect to networks. Okay, so that's at the device level. Networks have ways to limit what goes through them. So that's a connection at the network level. And then software can either have restrictions on what it can do, or you can restrict the software from not being able to run on the device at all. And so that's something that you can do as well. So we'll go ahead and take a look at that. So this is a little matrix here that I put together just to explain that the different components with the software, with a device software and a network. So this will show why it's so difficult, why internet security and protecting your children is so difficult. Because you start with a piece of hardware. Let's say you take a game, okay? We take a game and you may turn off, for instance, I can't point on this. I'm pointing with my finger, but it's not going up there. So you take a game, and a game has a messaging component. So maybe you say, my kids can't use the messaging component in the game, when they're connected to my, my home Wi-Fi, something like that. But then take another level of it. So take that same game, And many games have limited types of browsers in them. So you've limited the chat component, but you haven't limited the browser component of the game. So now the game can connect through, child can connect from a game to the browser to your home Wi-Fi. So let's say that you lock up your home Wi-Fi so that you restrict that. So that you know you can't use that the websites that are being restricted through that are controlled and you do have some restriction on that, but then that game is on a tablet or a console or a DS or something like that. They take it to someplace else. Now you've got them with a game and a browser on a public Wi-Fi network that where they don't have those restrictions that you had on your home network. And so that's why you just can't protect it at one level, because you can mix and match all of these things. Take any of these things, a phone, the browser, if the browser is accessible on the phone, they can get anywhere through the browser. And, with messaging, they can, any messaging app, they run the games there. There's game software. On it or through apps. I mean, if your kids have the ability to download apps on their phones, then they can access the internet in any way that they want. That's if you allow them to have whatever apps they want on their phone, then they will find apps and they'll put them on and you will lose control. You will not have control over those things. And so in looking at this, this is why I'm saying there's no single point of control. I'm going to give you some tools and ways to approach this and give you some names and such in just a minute here. But what I want you to understand is it's not as simple as, I'm going to install parental control software, on the device. It depends on what the software is being used for. What the device is being used for, what kind of software is running on it, and where it is, how it's connecting to a network. I mentioned Jot, and there are a number of other applications that are starting to come up along the same type of thing, where the network is a Bluetooth network. Like I said, your kids don't have wireless, they don't have a data plan, they're at school, they'll connect via, if they have Bluetooth on their device and they've got appropriate software on that device, then they can do the same kind of thing through a Bluetooth network, through these mesh networks with other kids as they get all their phones networked together by running similar apps. So you have to take a layered approach to security. You can't just do one thing and expect that it's going to control everything, because it just won't. It can't do that. So let me talk about this layered approach to security. So one of the first things I talked about was that you do have to maintain a strong relationship with your kids. It seems obvious to say, but if you don't, you won't have the in order to have that conversation with them, to be that backstop, to give them the foundation, the principles, the biblical principles that they need to be able to know what to do if they do get into some trouble on the internet. They need to have someone to come to. And of course, as a youth pastor, I work with kids and establish a rapport where they can come and they know that they can tell me anything and that it won't, that I don't tell other people. My rule is if they haven't killed someone, it's not illegal what they've done, then that's as far as it's going to go. They need to have people they can trust. So certainly the church is there, but it's got to start at home. They need to have that same kind of rapport with you. Otherwise, it just becomes becomes a battle, and you'll lose the battle because there are a lot more ways that they can get access to things they're not supposed to than you have tools to protect them from those things. So you've got to have that backstop there. You've got to foster their relationship with Christ. Whether that's, it's got to start at home and your relationship with Christ, the parents' relationship with Christ. You have to model that for them. Without that foundation, the flesh is weak. And these kids, you know, without that, without being able to call out on Jesus in the times that they need him, and when they come across these situations, they'll really be lost. It's a difficult battle, particularly with pornography, and the kids that are battling with that. And we do have kids in junior high group that are addicted to pornography. And they come and they want help, but it's because they have that relationship with Christ that they come and they ask for help with these things. And so that's the foundation. That's really all about, is they have to have that foundation. You do need to be able to teach them how to be responsible online. And that's a big job, because you've got to educate yourself somewhat on the technology that's out there and be involved in what's going on, and teach them what to do and what not to do on the internet. And go through scenarios if they come across different things. Talk about the searches that they do. Sean will talk about searches that kids do and how young they are when they do them. The statistics are just amazing. And so you need to teach them what to do. It's training them so they're not caught off guard. You know, it's like the military, where they train over and over and over for all kinds of different scenarios. You know, the police do the same. Any law enforcement, they train scenarios over and over and over. And you need to do the same thing. I suggest you do the same thing with your kids. If you don't walk them through scenarios of what happens when they see something online and what they're supposed to do, they probably won't know. They'll know it's wrong, but if you haven't gone through something with them when they face it for the first time, they'll be a little bit blindsided. And so it's a great tool to be able to walk through use cases with them and say, you know, let's take this scenario. This happens. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? This is somewhat of a controversial one, surprisingly, but be involved in their online lives. As I've explored this subject and started talking to parents, there are a lot of parents that think that they're prying, or that it's not their right to be monitoring their kids' online lives. I would strongly disagree. Okay, it's not a matter of that they have a right to the tools and the technology that you give them. If you don't partner with them in their online lives, you won't know what's going on in their online lives. And you see more and more now the ways that kids are leading lives online completely different than the lives they lead in the physical world. It's a really unusual phenomenon. It's being studied by psychologists and all kinds of universities now. But it's a scary thing. Kids will have completely different personas online than they will in the physical world. If you're not involved in your kids' online lives, then you will not know who they are online. You won't know who they're talking to. Those types of things. In the youth group, our rules is we have kids, obviously, that are getting hold of us through, you know, all the different chat applications and everything else. So they have relationships with adults. Since it's the church, it's generally accepted if a kid starts to, say something that is, you know, start to say things that's not appropriate, you know, with an adult in a messaging relationship, then I reach out to the parents. Because if they're doing it with someone like a youth pastor, then they're definitely, it's a much, much bigger problem. And so, you know, kids will confide in adults that they meet online that they would never talk to if they met them on the street. And so you need, it's just, Sean will go into it in more detail. I'm going to let him get up here in just one second. But I just want to tell you, I strongly would encourage you to be involved in their online lives. Do you have their passwords? Do you have access to their Facebook accounts? Do you know their Instagram? If it's Snapchat, you know, if they have Snapchat, you're kind of lost. There's not much you can do. It disappears, or Confide, or one of the, you know, tens or hundreds of other confidential, messaging apps. You won't know. There is monitoring software. I'll talk about some of the tools now and then turn it over to Sean. So first of all, we're talking about protecting things at different levels. So one of the steps you can start to take is protecting things at a network level. And the home network is one. One place you can do that. I would imagine most of you have Wi-Fi networks in your homes. And on a Wi-Fi network, you do have ways that you can protect those networks, that you can do filtering of, if they have access to a browser, what content they can use in that browser, what websites they can go to. And so there are free tools or inexpensive tools like OpenDNS is probably the largest one. You can configure your router, which does not seem as difficult as it sounds, to set it up for OpenDNS. And if you have trouble, you can call your cable company or whoever you get your internet from, and they can tell you how to do it with your router, or you can call the company that does the router or a friend who knows computers or something like that. It's not that difficult to do. And when you do that, you can set up automatic filtering. You know, you log on to OpenDNS and you say, I don't want these different sites to be, you know, only want these sites to be accessible. Either these categories of sites, or if you really want to lock it down, say they can have access to this, 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 and this. If you give them access to Google, they can still get to a whole lot, is the problem. So you have to be pretty specific in that. OpenDNS does an okay job of that, but it's difficult because there's, you know, new websites all the time. So that's one line of defense at the home. That means that any device that's connected via Wi-Fi in your home is going to have some kind of filtering on it when the kids are using a browser. Okay, it's browser protection for browsing the internet on there. Now, there are a lot of ways to defeat these types of protections. Whether it's a special router that's supposed to, filter out kids, filter websites or that kind of thing. There are websites called proxy sites. And so if a kid can get out to the internet and find a proxy site, what that means is from that proxy site, they can go to the proxy site, and even though they don't have access to it's like the category of pornography is blocked, the category of proxy sites is not. They can go to a proxy site, and from that site, that's a window into anywhere else on the internet that they want to go. If your home network allows them access to a proxy site, they'll find it. And kids learn about these things, and they pass the information around to each other. I hear it all the time. They know how to get around these things. Some kids have gone as far as they know in their computers or their devices how to change something called DNS settings. So they can also defeat these boxes or the software like OpenDNS that relies on that. They can bypass it in their devices. And if you give them access to Google, if they're running into a block on OpenDNS, they can Google, how do I get around OpenDNS? And they'll get a bunch of results. It tells them exactly, for their device, how to get around OpenDNS. So it's very, very tricky. But it's better than nothing. And especially for younger children, it's probably going to stop most of them. If you have a three-year-old that can change their own DNS settings, then they're going to be, wealthy and all that kind of thing, support you for the rest of your life. So for younger kids, it's better, but it's difficult, parents. That's why I'm saying you have to have that foundation in Christ. You have to have that foundation in that relationship with you. You have to spend time with them in their online lives. Otherwise, you just won't know. So then the devices themselves will typically have parental controls. And these are specific to the devices. Okay, there's not one set of parental controls that runs on all devices. So Apple has their parental controls that says, you know, when you set up accounts on an iPhone or an iPad or whatever, what that has access to. You can limit app use through that. You can restrict application use. There are limits to what you can do with that, but it's a line of defense. If you give a kid a smartphone, you want to set up the parental controls on that smartphone, absolutely. Giving them an unprotected smartphone is just like handing them a window to get into everything that you don't want them to get into. You just shouldn't do it. So you can read up. If it's Android, you can Google, how to set up the parental controls on an Android phone or an iPhone or a Windows phone, or if anyone's still using BlackBerry. then you can do that. And the same thing with game consoles, okay? They have parental controls. Some of you may be familiar with that, some of you may not. So Xbox, you know, PS3, PS4, your DS devices, all of those, they have parental controls on them so that you can control what goes on and what your kids can and can't have access to. It's not foolproof, but it is at least a start what can be done and layers of protection. You can install device access and monitoring software. And I have one mentioned here because a friend who's here mentioned it, and I looked it up. But there are pieces of software that you can load on your on devices. So and typically they support Android and iOS or Apple. And you can load it on, and what it will do is it will allow you a more granular level of control, more full control over what your kids do on their smartphones or tablets than the parental controls give you the ability to do. They will also allow you to monitor what happens on those devices to a large extent. They'll tell you what apps they're running. You can have records of texts, records of calls, that sort of thing that go on, which some people feel it's intrusive and they shouldn't, you know, it's not their right to be involved in their kids' lives that way. I disagree. I believe it is absolutely your responsibility to be involved in your kids' lives that way. Otherwise, my personal feeling is we have a responsibility as parents to shepherd our kids, and that's part of shepherding our kids. And so this one here, this Home Halo, I just found out about it. It's a company in the UK, has both a router, which does kind of what OpenDNS does, as well as the applications that go on it. There's an application that's kind of popular called Phone Sheriff. You can load that on a device. You can Google, or whatever your favorite search engine is, and find out parental, control applications and look in the iTunes store or the Google Play store and see what's out there and read reviews and that kind of thing. But again, none of these are perfect. They're just not. The ability for them to monitor what's going on in the cell phone is limited by what the cell phone itself, what the manufacturer or the operating system, Android or iOS, will allow it to do. So, for instance, Apple is very protective of the software that runs on its hardware. And so parental control applications like Phone Sheriff that run on iOS don't have a lot of ability. Apple doesn't give them the ability to do a lot on it. You can only control so much. You can do more with Android, but not entirely. There's certain things that those software makers, Android and iOS, don't want you to have access to in the phone. And so the software will only go so far. But again, it's another layer of protection. And so kind of closing this part of it, look at it from the different levels. So let's talk about the device level real quick. The device will have a connection. It will have, Wi-Fi connections, a cell, maybe a data plan or a data connection, a Bluetooth connection, an RFID connection. You can enable and disable those on the phone. If you've got parental controls set up, then your kids can't get into the settings to be able to re-enable them. And so if you don't want them to have access, when they go away, except for phone calls, you can do that. You can take away all their access to the internet, but still allow them to have the ability to do phone calls on that. And that is possible, but you have to disable those networks. You just don't disable the voice network. So you want to leave that one on. But the rest of it, you can disable on that. So that's at the very low level on the device. On the software, we talked about you can restrict, there's the parental controls. You can restrict what kids can run. You can install monitoring software, that type of thing. And then on the networks, on your home network, you can set up things like OpenDNS, Home Halo, or other systems. With a cell network, because remember, your home network, when you protect that does not protect them when they're on a data plan and they have data through the carrier. Carriers do have their own filtering, so you can log on to your carrier, Verizon or T-Mobile or Sprint or AT&T, and they will allow some level of filtering, internet filtering on their end. You can set up what they call white lists, which means that through that particular network for that account, that device will only be, when it's on the cell provider's network, it will only be able to access these certain websites. Again, it's not foolproof because once they're off of that network, those controls no longer apply. Once they go to a Wi-Fi network, a public Wi-Fi network somewhere, at Starbucks or something, then they're no longer on under those protections. So, but again, another layer. You've got the hardware layer, you've got the network layer, and you've got the software layer. And so you need all three of those. But can't emphasize enough, really the bottom line is take the steps that you can to protect, do the levels of protection that you can, at least have something there, but you've got to establish the foundation in Christ, and foster that relationship, have a strong relationship with them so that you can be involved in their online lives, and then teach them how to use the internet responsibly, because invariably at some point they're going to get into a situation, whether it's, you know, on their device or a friend's device that's unprotected, you know, then it's the Wild West, and you know, they can go anywhere they want. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Sean, and he'll continue on here with his part of the presentation.
Thanks, Steve. Hello, my name is Sean Halawinski. I'm with the Tucson Police Department. The last 3 years I was in the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit. Just a brief overview of Internet Crimes Against Children Unit. It's part of a nationwide task force. It's supported through the Department of Justice, and it essentially has three prongs that it works. It works child pornography, it works the guys that are online trying to meet kids, and then it also works the stuff where the guys are actually sending child pornography specifically to children. Most of us grew up in a time where we were all taught stranger danger. Either a police officer or a counselor came to the school and told us, be aware of the guy that is hanging out outside the school, the guy at the park, the guy at the mall. Be aware of those guys, the guys that pull up to you in a car or in a van saying, hey, help me find my puppy, or do you want some candy? We were all taught that as kids, and we realized, okay, we got to be aware of that. And the reason why those guys were at those locations is that's where the children were. Today, you know, you go to a park and there might be, you know, 50 kids at the most. You go to a school, there might be 1,000 kids at the most. You go to a mall, there might be, you know, a few thousand people there. You go online and you have access to thousands and thousands of kids and thousands of opportunities. All these kids are online, they're on video games, they're on social networking sites, and we see that. With the Tucson Police Department, there's two of us that work in the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit, and we have enough work there that we could staff two full squads. It's just, you know, the reality of it. Child predators are relentless, they're persistent, and you know, you guys go throughout the day and you're thinking about your job, you're thinking about your family, you're thinking about, you know, what you're gonna make for dinner or what you want to do for the weekend, and these guys are thinking about how they can get in contact with kids all day long. There are forums online teaching these guys different techniques to come and meet kids online. And so I'm going to just share with you a little bit about some of the stuff we've seen, some of the trends we've seen, and just for you to be aware. You know, Steve did a really good job of just kind of giving you the basics of what's out there, and just, you know, for what you should do as parents, you know, with your children. One thing that we deal with a lot are these guys that are trying to lure kids. These guys want two things from your children. They either want to meet them in person, or they want to have them send explicit photos or videos to them, okay? The youngest case that I've had so far was a 9-year-old girl. She was on the app called Tango. Anybody familiar with Tango? Heard of it? All right, it's a social networking app like Facebook, and it's designed just to go out there, meet people, chat, and all that kind of stuff. And one day, Dad went on the phone and was looking at it and had a very explicit picture from an adult male to his 9-year-old daughter, all right? And her picture is on her Facebook or her Tango profile of a 9-year-old girl. You cannot mistake how old she is. He knew. But on her profile, she said, hey, I like chatting. If you want to chat, hit me up. Send me a message. And so there are hundreds and hundreds of kids that's what they're doing, okay? They go online, they feel more secure, they feel more protected, they feel a little more anonymous so that they can go out and talk to people. And these guys, within the first 5 minutes, first 15 minutes, first day, they take this innocent conversation about a video game or about a movie or about a book or whatever, and they bring it down to talking about sex. And we've had parents that, 3 o'clock in the morning, a mom woke up, she was thirsty, she's walking down the hall towards the kitchen, she sees her daughter's room light is on, 3 o'clock in the morning, her daughter's 10 years old, what's going on? So she opens up the door, the daughter has her iPad, she tosses it under the pillow, she's like, hey mom, what's up? She's like, no, let me see what's on here. Grabs that iPad, explicit picture from an adult male to her 10-year-old daughter. All right, this is happening all the time. And we've had it with families that have both parents. We've had it from divorced families. We've had it from foster families. We've had it in all types of situations. So, the whole reason why we're here, and we're kind of preaching in the choir because a lot of you are here because you are concerned and you want to know what's best for your kids and what's best for the kids that you're in contact with, okay, and those other families. But, go out and share with these other families that have not been able to make it due for whatever reason, and, go out and share with them about these issues that they need to address with their kids. So, you can be anybody you want on the internet. One of the things that we do is we work in an undercover capacity, all right? We pose as young children online, and we, answer ads, or we talk in some of these chat rooms, and all of these guys, it's like, flies to honey, bees to honey, sorry, flying over there, and they're chatting to us, okay? Oh, you're a 13-year-old girl. Hey, you're an 11-year-old girl. Hey, what's up? And it's me in my undercover capacity, but do I look like a 13-year-old girl to anybody here? No. But can I get a picture online and pose as a 13-year-old girl? Can I get my friend's 13-year-old girl picture? Very easily. And this happens all the time. And so with this slide here, this guy is pretending to be a cute football player boy talking to this girl. And, his whole desire is to meet her. All right? Their whole thing is to try to get as much information from your children as possible to befriend them, okay? Instead of, you're meeting, kids meeting at the soccer field, a lot of these kids are online, and they're meeting these guys, and these guys put up pictures. And let me be upfront with this. These guys are trying to have a heterosexual and a homosexual relationship with children. Girls and boys are just as susceptible, okay? These guys are in the same types of games that involve boys and girls, social networks, same type of things, okay? I've seen it where these guys will pretend to be a girl and soliciting these young boys. Hey, send me a picture. Here's a naked picture of me. Send me one back, okay? This guy here, fake Facebook page, okay? You can be anybody you want online. These guys know it. They know where to go. They know what these kids' interests are. All right? So some things for you to just start thinking about. And those of you who are taking notes or are going to listen to this later, some good resources off the top, at the beginning is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. The Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, they've partnered with NCMEC, is the acronym for National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They're out of Washington, D.C., and they're a great resource. They have what they call, I think it's netsmarts.org, and they give you a lot of ways as parents to talk to your children about this stuff. They have videos. They can kind of point you in the right direction. They'll also help you with lingo. Another resource, and I recommend this to parents and adults only, is Urban Dictionary. I don't know if any of you have heard of it. It's extremely graphic in what they say on there, but there are some terms that even, I've been in law enforcement 14 years, and I don't even know. I get these chat messages that, we get from these guys, or I, get these girls' accounts or these little boys' accounts, and we end up taking them over and chatting with these guys, and they're saying terms that I've never even heard of, or they're extremely graphic, and I'm like, what does this mean? And then Urban Dictionary, it's not a PG site, but it is very good. It will give you definitions of stuff that, you know, about drugs, about, you know, sex things, about, you know, violent things that you might not be aware of. All right. Our children, I mean, a lot of schools now are pushing children to be online. They're giving them Google accounts, Google Plus accounts, Microsoft accounts, all these different accounts, because that's the way you get your grades, that's the way you can communicate with the teachers, that's the way they can work on projects, all that kind of stuff, okay? It's the double-edged sword, the internet. Unfortunately for me, I just see the dark side of it, okay? I don't, you know, and so I'll be telling you guys about the dark side of it. One thing a lot of parents forget, and it's kind of like, you know, some of us, our parents are like, hey, can you program the VCR? And now our kids are the ones that are telling us how to set up our Wi-Fi at our house, set up all the different games, how to purchase games, all that kind of stuff. Your Xboxes, your PlayStations, your Nintendos, even the little handheld Nintendo DSs are all internet-based. We were talking to a guy who's a police officer, and he was at the airport with his son, and he was just playing on his Nintendo DS. And all of a sudden, he got a little message on his Nintendo DS saying, hey, what are you doing here on the airport? His 12-year-old son just playing on there. He's like, what the? Well, the Nintendo DS had a setting in it that if someone's within 500 feet of you, you can send them a message. It'll prompt you saying, hey, there's somebody here. And then all of a sudden, you're chatting, okay? And so things to just be aware of. Go into any of these systems that all have parental controls, familiar yourself with them so that you can get them locked down as much as you can. As you can see by these statistics here, the online world is almost a completely separate world of what's happening. What we share with kids is you do not be friends with somebody online that you're not friends with in real life. Okay, I don't care if they're a friend who says, hey, I really know Bobby really well, so you and I can be friends. Here's my friend invitation. We just tell them no, okay? Because these predators, they want two things from your kids. They either want to meet them in person or they want them to send explicit pictures or videos, okay? And unfortunately, these guys are very smooth, all right? These child predators have resources online that help them talk to kids, okay? And their whole process is the grooming process, where they're going to befriend them with whatever game or application they're involved in, and then they're going to move them slowly down the road to a sexual conversation and then sending pictures, sending videos, all right? They'll move them to a phone number, text message, that kind of stuff. And, you know, one thing that we need to be aware of as parents is that just because my son or daughter has an iPad or some type of tablet or something like that, and we're like, well, it has no phone access or anything like that, it's treated the same way as a phone, okay? Same way as a computer. All of these devices are. All right. Online enticement. That's where these guys are trying to meet the kids and trying to, you know, they're talking to them online, trying to meet them in person. And we've arrested many guys here in Tucson, so much that we're so busy that we have to just take turns going from arresting a guy for child pornography to arresting a guy that's trying to lure a minor online. One thing that I will talk to you guys about is sexting. That is becoming more and more prevalent. The access by children to child pornography, distribution of child pornography, and we'll touch on cyberbullying. Children are solicited sexually all the time online. Whether they're playing Call of Duty, they're playing Destiny, they're playing World of Warcraft, even Minecraft. Minecraft has a chat function. We have a young girl, she was 10 years old, and she was playing this clone of Minecraft called Pixel Gun 3D. You can play it on your little phone, your tablet, and it's designed just, you know, it's an 8-bit character. You're running around and you're shooting other 8-bit characters. It's totally PG-rated game, and you would never think anything bad. Well, this adult male, went on there, started talking to this girl, moved her onto a cell phone, and had her send explicit videos to him. And these are things that these kids don't realize, but it's forever. It's on the internet forever, okay? This child pornography that we encountered, myself and the other detectives that are in the task force, this child pornography has been out there from as recently as last week to, you know, the 1980s. The same stuff is getting circulated. It's out there online. One of the things that kids like is they like talking. Most games, video games now, have some type of social interaction. It's just design. All the game designers have realized the popularity of Call of Duty, Minecraft, all that kind of stuff. It's more fun to work together as a team to beat a bad guy or to go into something, to have all these goals as a group. And so all these child predators will go in there, have these benign profiles acting as kids, and then slowly move on and chat with them. They also push them to going into chat rooms. We're like, hey, let's go over to this chat room and talk. If you ever go into a chat room as an adult, and you go into just one of these chat rooms, and you could be, you know, moms having problems with children, you'll be shocked at how quickly these chat rooms turn into these guys soliciting you to have sex with your children, okay? They're acting like other adults, and they're saying, hey, oh, yeah, we'll go in there, and we'll chat, and all of a sudden, it quickly moves over to that. So the big thing is they're trying to get in communication with your children. Instant messaging. Facebook used to be extremely popular with these guys because a lot of, you know, families would have Facebook as designed to, you know, stay in contact with friends and family that are not in their neighborhood anymore and all throughout the United States, all throughout the world. I mean, we're in contact with missionaries overseas, friends that are overseas, all that kind of stuff. We share pictures with children, you know, to be in contact. And then we encourage our children to create their own accounts so that they can go out there. One thing that now we've seen the backlash of that. All these guys have had access to our children's photos. They see what's going on in our children's lives. One of the things that we go out and we teach kids is to not have to have gender-neutral chat names, to be very neutral online, to not give out any of their information or pictures online. Instant messaging. Snapchat's a big one. There's clones of Snapchat also. If you are not familiar with Snapchat or Kick Messenger, Snapchat, it was designed initially as you can have sexting conversations with other people, sending them photos, sending them, you know, suggestive dialogue or videos, and then you have a timer on that picture or on that video or on that message that after 10 seconds, 5 seconds, or whatever, that disappears. And then all the app manufacturers, within a few months after that, started creating apps that you can capture those videos, those pictures, those messages before they disappear. So these young boys and girls that thought they were sending a picture of themselves to somebody else and thinking it would go away, they're not going away. Those people have saved it. They're screenshotting them. They're saving them with other apps. But then other devices have come out, or other apps have come out to try to make it more secure so you can have that. Supposed secret conversations. But there's lots of ways that these kids are learning just by friends at school or through their conversations of having these behind-the-scenes conversations. So when these people, when you're on Twitter, when you're on Facebook, and everything that you like is posted on your profile, and these guys, these predators, see that, and they see that as a way in to talk with the kids. One thing that we encourage parents to do is to go into all these sites that your kids are on and find out what the parental restrictions are. Go on your phones, find out what the restrictions are, and get them locked down. These bad guys are on all of these sites, all right? Pinterest. I've had a case where these guys are on Pinterest, Craigslist, all these sites that we used to not even think about, Instagram, child pornography. These guys are on there trying to solicit or send pictures to other people. YouTube, chat roulette, Omegle. Those are web, chat roulette and Omegle. They initially started out as these college kids wanting to have video conferences for a minute, 2 minutes at a time, randomly throughout the world with different people. Within a day or two of it starting, it became all about explicit videos. Okay. One thing that children end up doing is they end up sending these pictures either with themselves. A lot of parents have questions about, okay, my son or daughter's in junior high or high school, and they've now sent a picture to their boyfriend or girlfriend in high school or junior high. And they get very concerned about it because before, what we used to charge for was child pornography. Arizona legislature has changed or created a new law, and it's basically having to deal with sexting, okay? Because we have many cases that, you know, are called into the police department by either high school counselors, parents, that kind of stuff. And some of the parents are like, well, we don't want to notify the police because we don't want our son or daughter arrested for child pornography. The sexting law has to do with just getting kids corrected. If it's a child versus another child, the charge is a petty offense. So if you consider homicide as your first degree felony or felony one, your lowest degree of felony is felony six, then you have misdemeanors like somebody breaking a window or, you know, keying your car, and then petty offense is the very lowest. And basically that's like kids that are trying to smoke or they are truant or something like that. So if a child sends a picture of themselves in a state of undress to another child, they can be charged with a petty offense. And essentially what the design of the law is to get the children in the system and for them to realize, okay, I've messed up, this is something stupid I've done, okay? It's not designed to put them in jail or anything like that, but it's to get the children to realize, I cannot be doing this. Now, if, you know, Susie sends it to Johnny, and then Johnny goes and shows the whole soccer team the picture that Susie has sent him, then he will also be guilty of a crime also, and it'll be a class three misdemeanor, which on the scale of crimes is not that great, but it's going to be a thing where they might have some community service, but it's basically to let them know to knock this off. Okay, this is a crime that detectives will not come out and investigate. It'll be a patrol officer will investigate it, something along those lines. But a lot of parents are seeing this. I mean, countless kids with their phones, with their iTouches, their iPads, their tablets are sending these pictures to other kids. And one thing that they don't realize is that's permanent, that's forever, and that's out there forever. Okay, and there's guys that are out there posing as young kids trying to get as many of those pictures and videos as possible. They're creating collections, they're sending them to other guys, they're trading them like baseball cards to other people, okay? And so this is something for kids to be aware of now. And so when you're talking to your kids, let them know that when they do send that picture or that video and it's to another kid, then they are breaking the law. And maybe that'll be enough for them to realize, okay, I'm going to think, hopefully, before I send it, okay? All right. More and more kids are doing these pictures because it's so easy. It's so easy because you have your phone with you. You have a front-facing camera, you have a rear-view facing camera. Another thing that a lot of people don't realize is that every time you take a picture on your phone, there's information embedded on that picture. And when you send that picture to somebody else, all that information is in there, okay? And then included in that information is GPS information. So when these young boys or girls are taking pictures of themselves, where are they normally taking pictures? In their room or in the bathroom of their house? These guys now know exactly where those kids live because there's free programs out there that will let you rip all the data off of that phone, put it in a map like Google Maps, and now I know exactly where that child is, okay? Sextortion's also happening a lot too, where these young girls or young boys will send a naked picture of themselves and they will totally regret it. That is the dumbest thing that I've done. I'm so sorry. I will never, and they send the message, I'm not gonna send you anymore. The next message they'll get is, I'm gonna post this all over Facebook, I'm gonna post this all over Instagram, your naked picture, unless you send me more. And these poor kids are so scared and so embarrassed about what they've done, they'll send more videos and more pictures, okay? We had a guy that we arrested, we worked with the U.S. District Attorney's Office. He was up in New York, and he was in contact with, I believe, 20 young girls, and they were sending him naked pictures and videos, and he was extorting them, telling them that he was gonna make it their life miserable unless they sent more of those pictures. We've seen it with, young girls and young boys. Yik Yak, this is the Snapchat symbol. Just go into your kid's phone, tablet, get familiar with what they have. Instagram, all this stuff, all these social networking things have a way for these guys to reach your kids, okay? Pornography, one of these things that these suspects will do is they'll actually send pornography to your children as part of the grooming thing. Okay, I arrested a guy. He was 70 years old, posing as a 13-year-old, communicating with a girl in Minnesota. She totally thought that this was true love. They were going to meet in the summertime. They were going to, have sex for the first time. And he was sending her videos of, hey, this is the type of sex that I want to do. Okay? And so these guys are furnishing these children with this. And so stuff for you to be aware of. And also be aware of is that not only can they have it on their device, but you can plug in a thumb drive, you can have it stored somewhere else. And so be in communication with your children. Okay, these toys that are on the back of kids' backpacks, we've seen quite a few of them that are actually thumb drives that are storing 8 gigabytes, 64 gigabytes worth of information. If you think about it, 64 gigabytes is like 64 full-length motion pictures. All right, children just being encountering online pornography, not only directly but also indirectly, following the links, clicking on these different ads that they see or these different links on these websites. You can go to a generic website, start following the links down. Go to a sports website and then they have little articles about swimsuits or something like that, and then you follow those down and it will go down into pornography down the road. So you just need to be aware of that as parents. Look into their history. Another thing is a lot of child porn or pornography is under innocent looking websites. And then also, I'll show you, I think it's in the next slide, where they're gonna have it set up where if you just misspell one word in your URL, you're in a completely different website than you thought. And the URL is essentially just the address for the website. So you can see the difference between nsync.com and nsync.org. All right, that's just an example right there. Emails, a lot of people have spam filters, but a lot of these kids are getting email addresses as part of their school requirements. And so sometimes you're gonna get some bad emails sent in there. Even though the schools are trying to filter out everything they can, sometimes that stuff will pop in there. These children, these 10-year-olds that we've taken over their accounts and talked to these bad guys, they're using sexual terms and graphic terms that I didn't even know were. The level of sophistication that they're talking with these suspects online is amazing. And the way it's happening is, these kids are talking at school, they're talking in some of these chat rooms, and they're learning these terms and exploring them and going out, and they're thinking they're safe that they're at home, but they're learning this stuff quicker and quicker. They're getting sexualized at a younger and younger age. And so we just need to be aware of that. And, you know, most of these, some of these legitimate websites will say you have to be an adult, okay? But to some of these kids, that's like candy. Oh, sure, I promise I'm 18. I will not go into this website. I solemnly swear. No, a lot of these teenagers or young, you know, kids are like, that is the magnet right there. It says adults only. That means that I should go check that out. Website age verification. You can put whatever age you want. All right. You can see right here how quickly these people are, how early they're searching for pornography terms. This was something that was shocking to us. And, you know, every year being in the Internet Crimes Against Children unit, our shock is getting younger and younger. When I first came into the unit, I was surprised at an 11-year-old. Then I had a 10-year-old victim. And then my most recent one was a 9-year-old victim. And, you know, actively online communicating with these guys in a sexual manner. And so it's getting younger and younger. It's getting pushed younger and younger. One of the big things that is sharing child pornography right now is peer-to-peer file sharing programs. A lot of kids are on these file sharing programs because a lot of kids now, they do not want to go to Target and spend $10 to $20 on a movie or a CD when you can get it free online right now. Okay, the internet is all about instant gratification. Child pornography is, in the 1980s, it was 90% contained. Between local law enforcement, the U.S. Postal Service, and like the FBI task force, it was 90% contained. Today, it's less than 1% contained. It's out there, it's in all types of avenues and vehicles online for these bad guys. Cyberbullying, I'll touch on this real quickly. It's on a rise, it's also a big catchphrase out there. People are saying, I'm being cyberbullied, I'm being bullied. This is something that most of you as parents will deal with at one time or another if your child has some type of online presence. The sticky point will always be is people's right to free speech. So you guys have every right to call the police, you know, bad names and that kind of stuff, and we can't go out there and arrest you. People have the right to disagree with you and call you, you know, bad names, that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, that does also happen with children. So if cyberbullying does occur, there's some things that you can do as parents. And one of the easiest things to do is just report that. A lot of these social network sites are very sensitive to cyberbullying. A lot of these video games, a lot of, you know, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo are very sensitive to that. And if you go on there and you say that my child is being picked on or being, you know, have some bad stuff directed at them by certain people, those people will get blocked or they'll be filtered out from your son or daughter's communication. All right, it's out there. You know, if you ever go online and you play a video game, you go play one of these video games and to listen to the way the racist stuff that has been said by these kids and the sexual stuff that's said by these kids to each other just to try to be cool or whatever, it's devolves down into bullying after a while. All right. Warning signs is when you start noticing your children are being withdrawn, okay? And then they start identifying with these bullies and they start doing it themselves to other kids. All right, you can contact the police in some instances. when it starts devolving into threats or it's harassment that's going in multiple avenues. Best way to deal with this, though, is to block them, and or if you have to change your child's account information so they don't have access anymore. So essentially, what can you do as a parent? And Steve hit on this, okay? And one thing that we encourage parents is that you get involved as much as possible into your kid's life, okay? I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to that have told me that they don't have the right to go into their children's phone or tablet or computer, okay? They are your children, okay? Your job is to make sure they're alive and healthy as much as possible when they're 18 years old, okay? After they're 18, they're still your children, but now they get to make their own decisions with all their life, and you have less and less control of that. But your job is that that's your phone that you're paying for, or that's your computer you're paying for, or whatever. Even if they've won it or been given it to them by somebody else, your job is to get in there and to be as intrusive as possible. And if you're the one that has to be the bad guy and ground them from whatever, then that's fine, because we don't want another case with a 9-year-old girl, okay? We've had lots of cases. One of the reasons the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force got a lot of funding is there was a young lady in the early 2000s. Her name is Alicia Kosakovich. And if you ever have a chance, go to YouTube and look at her video. But she testifies that she was 13 years old and she was communicating online. And she was talking to this other girl who said, hey, we have the same things of interest. Moved to, hey, there's this boy that you would like. You should talk to him. She started talking to this boy named Tyree, and they developed an online relationship. Tyree said, hey, my brother's gonna come pick you up, and we'll go drive, and we'll go meet. And I'm sure some of you have seen that Facebook video of the guy that the YouTube video of a guy that recently showed some parents about that. Well, what happened is she went outside, and I think she was living in Missouri at the time, and it was in the middle of winter, so she's freezing cold. She goes outside, and all she's wearing is just her regular clothes. This guy abducts her. He takes her across state lines. He chains her in a basement and does horrific things to her. And he told her on the final day, I'm getting bored with you. And at that time, she realized that she was not going to live. And thankfully, the FBI, working with the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, sent in their SWAT team and rescued her from there and arrested that guy. And that guy was a 30-year-old guy, and she had no idea. This happens a lot. These guys are online a lot. And so be aware as much as you can. Be intrusive. If you ever have any questions or anything like that, good resources, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force is kind of a good resource, but National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is very good. NICMCNetSmarts.org, and just be aware there. Parental controls, go in there. If you don't know, make yourself aware. Find the computer nerd that you know. There's always a nerd in every family that's a computer nerd, and get with them and talk with them, okay? Let's see. Another thing that is very good is put your computer, laptop in the dining room, in the family room, not in the children's room, okay? Don't let them bring it back over there. And if they do, you can turn off the internet also so that all they can play is stuff that, you know, does not have any type of Wi-Fi access or RFID access or something along those lines. All right, encourage your children to be, act like a secret agent. Don't put any of their information online. Birthdays, it's very easy. You see how quickly these kids will give out their addresses, their phone numbers to these guys. And like Steve was sharing earlier, management software. And if you do start seeing their history deleted, you need to find out why and make consequences to that. All right, well, I can't trust you with this anymore because I don't know what you're doing. Here's some other websites that will help you learn different things. One of the popular ones used to be, what used to be, POTS, stood for parent over the shoulder. So if they're chatting with somebody, they just put in that acronym real quick, and all of a sudden the chat would turn real neutral or talking about a movie or a game. And so that, and these guys would tell the kids, hey, let me know when your mom comes home. Let me know when, you know, somebody's coming in the room. All right. When it comes down, what is reasonable for your kids to be online, you need to be talking to them about it, okay? Find out their maturity level, where they're at in life, okay? What is required from them at school, and stay involved as much as possible. Some parents have been in conversations with the schools and just said, hey, I'm fine with the kids doing A, B, and C, but I don't want them part of, you know, a certain chat group or this stuff being outside. A lot of schools work very diligently in trying to prevent a lot of that stuff, but still some of this stuff will leak out. One of the most important things that we share with kids when we give our presentations is never meet these guys in person, okay? Never, ever meet these guys in person. And if these guys ever put that in there, hey, let's meet, that is the big red alert, and they need to let us know. Who can you contact, okay? If these guys are talking like this and you have a strong suspicion as it's an adult or you know it's an adult, then call 911 immediately, okay? If you think it's just another kid that they're conversing with, then get that person blocked and let the online provider know, okay? We get a lot of tips from Microsoft, Google, Facebook, where the parents have blocked this person who is communicating with their child, and Facebook will look at it, and they'll discover that person's actually an adult. They'll send that information to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They act as a clearinghouse for all the internet service providers, and then that information is forwarded to law enforcement, and then we're serving a warrant at that guy's house down the road. So here's the four R's: recognize, refuse, respond, report. These kids need to be aware as much as possible. I've shared with you some of the techniques that child predators use. Refuse any information that these guys want that is outside of just generic information. And respond assertively. And these guys know. These guys know who those young boys and girls are that are very, that have low self-esteem. And they will peg them, all right? And then report it to a parent or a trusted adult. That's the conclusion. We'll be here for any questions, and thank you guys very much.
We'll open it up for questions in just a second. I want to thank Catherine at the Calvary Chapel Christian School for putting this together and for just arranging this. And for those of you who want to leave, you can. And for those of you who want to stick around, Sean and I will be here. We can just come up and we'll take any questions that you have. And we also have pastors around, Scott and Anders and myself, and there may be others. And so we, you know, if there's parents here as well that are struggling with some of the same issues that we're talking about kids being having a struggle with, feel free to talk to a pastor here. We'd be happy to chat with you about that as well. So God bless you, and come on up and ask any questions.